drama, drama, drama. This is Patty Perez, and you're listening to the Drama Free Workplace podcast, where I combine the wisdom passed down to me by my drama free Salvadoran parents with the lessons I've learned from nearly 30 years working as an attorney, workplace investigator, author, and speaker. We'll cover topics from faith to friendship, ethics to equity, bullying to bias, and everything in between. I throw in a dash of my Latina sass and bring my perspective as a mom, wife, daughter, and friend to make the serious topic of workplace conflict seem less daunting so that you can manage and resolve drama effectively. Welcome, everyone, to the next series in the Drama Free Workplace. I'm going to be introducing a type of podcast series that I'm going to be coming back to a couple of occasions, and that is stories from the trenches, sharing real life investigation stories from my past investigation practice. Obviously, I am changing names, I am changing names of companies and some details. And I'm also condensing some information, in some cases, maybe talking about a conglomerate of personalities or kind of putting together some of the factual background issues for purposes of simplicity. But every single one of these is based on a real life investigation that I conducted. This one that you are going to hear about today, first starting from the person who lodged the complaint, is a person concerned with some issues related to racial bias. And so I chose this particular investigation as one that really could get us, could segue from the diversity, inclusion, and equity series that we've been focusing on for the last month or so, and to start looking at this now from a practical, real-life perspective. And my goal with doing these, with recreating these investigations, has a couple of different goals, a couple of different purposes. So one is that for those of you who are leaders who either have already, or I guarantee if you haven't, you will at some point, receive from an employee some concern, a belief that someone is harassing them, bullying them, being biased against them, making decisions that are unfair, you name it. At some point, if you haven't already, you will get that kind of concern lodged with you. If you are a person in a department like HR or diversity or legal or risk management or security, you might actually be charged with investigating these complaints from beginning to end. And so for you, it really is going to be a glimpse into my advice, my guidance for you on how you should not only conduct the interviews themselves, but also do the analysis and reach some conclusions. And then there are going to be in each of these a series of learning lessons. Sometimes they have to do with the actual facts. Sometimes it's talking about best practices for how to interview people. So I'm really going to be focusing on different areas. And one of the things that I want to start out with before I play for you the reenactment of this interview, I'm going to be interviewing Gloria, who is the person who has lodged a complaint of racial bias against a guy named Archie. But one of the things I want you to notice right away is that I use the funnel method when I'm interviewing people. So I start out with some pretty broad categories. I want to know about Gloria's work in general, Gloria's work on this committee that is at issue here. And then I get more and more specific and I start talking about specific issues that I need to get information on. In this particular case, in real life, and we reenacted it here, Gloria had submitted a pretty lengthy, detailed written complaint that not only outlined what the timeline was and what her specific concerns were, but also actually had some attached documents for me to look at. That happened in about half the cases that I investigated where somebody had put their concerns in writing, but just as often people didn't. They maybe just called a hotline or did something a little bit less formal. And then finally, the other thing that I want to point out, and you'll see this right at the beginning, and I'm going to be focusing on this in when I reenact these investigations, and that is setting the scene and setting expectations. So you're going to hear me right off the bat try to make Gloria feel as comfortable as possible. So make it clear that I'm here because I'm very curious, because I take my job seriously, because I take her allegations seriously, and because I truly want to get to the truth. And I also want to explain to her the parameters and the ground rules, what I can and can't promise, what I expect from her, and the fact that she can at any time feel comfortable asking me questions, taking a break, stopping the process, maybe to just maybe gather herself. And I think that's really one of the areas I'm going to be focusing on when I talk about investigations, is that while there are certainly some steps that can and should be followed, a really overarching theme that you're going to hear me talk about is that so much of this has to do with the demeanor and the characteristics of a good investigator. So that idea of being genuinely curious, of wanting to be a problem solver, of not just wanting to check boxes, of being a great listener. And then I'm going to share with you at the end of the interview some specific tips once you've actually heard what Gloria has to say. So let's hear from her now. Hi, Gloria.
Morning. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I, first of all, just always want to start out by thanking the people who I have the pleasure of interviewing, and especially when it's somebody in your position, I really am so thankful that you had the courage to come forward and to share some of your concerns. As you know, I'm going to be conducting the investigation about the concerns that you've raised. There are some details that I got from the written communication that you shared, and certainly that's a great beginning for me. But the purpose of this interview today is for me to get more context, get more detail, and to really just hear directly from you in terms of what your concerns are. So in general, just a couple of ground rules that might be helpful for you to know. I'm going to be asking you, questions that I don't have any specific answer in mind. Really, my goal is for you to think back and give me your best recollection. If there's something you don't know or you don't remember, just tell me. I'm not here to play any tricks. I just want to get the answers to these questions as best as you can recall them. I did want to share with you that this interview is confidential, but I want to make sure that I define what I mean by that. On one end of a spectrum, it certainly means that people who do not need to know anything about what we're talking about won't know. And so I'm going to be interviewing other people as part of this process. If any of them ask me, what did Gloria say? My response will be, I can't share that with you. So it's going to have a very, very high level of confidentiality. But it is important that I explain to you the other end of the spectrum of confidentiality. And that is that if I were to promise you 100% confidentiality, then I couldn't do my job, because I do need to disclose some of the details about what you're sharing with me, not only for purposes of me being able to do my analysis and reach some conclusions, but also because of fairness. So in this case, you have raised some concerns related to Archie, and perhaps other people, might come up in our interview today. And, one of the primary jobs that I have is to be fair to everyone. And if there are some concerns that are being raised, then I need to make sure that they understand what those concerns are. So some of the details that you're going to be sharing with me, while I certainly don't have to, give every single detail, I have to share with Archie at least the details about the concerns that were raised about him, so that he can then provide me his response. Does that make sense?
I understand. Thank you for laying that out for me.
Absolutely. And yeah, that really is my goal, is to make this as comfortable a process as possible. And again, just to put you in a very comfortable position so that you can share this with me. If at any point you have any other questions, or if I ask a question that maybe you feel is unclear, please feel free to ask me to clarify it. But why don't we go ahead and get started? And I always like to start out with getting a little bit about the background of who I'm talking to. So love to hear a little bit more about you in terms of how long you've been with the company, what you do, and also a little more about the committee that is the subject matter here.
Sure. So yeah, I've been with the company for 7 years at this point. I've worked in numerous departments. I'm currently the manager in the marketing department. I was in consideration for a senior management position. Well, talk about that later, I'm sure. I have been with the DEI committee for, 2 years at this point, and that's due to just my position as the marketing manager. And I feel that we do a lot of good work, and we make a lot of progress and help provide opportunities and qualifications for the contractors. But Archie has a tendency to make comments and is very audible about his dislike of the DEI program, in my opinion, which I feel like holds up a lot of the process, if we're being honest.
Got it. Okay. And we're going to get into some of the details, as you said, in terms of some examples maybe of what the things that Archie has said, some examples of the reaction that you or some of your coworkers have had, but just to make sure that I've got it clear. So in terms of your participation, so if I understand correctly, this DEI committee that's looking at contracting with external suppliers and contractors, the way that it's formed is basically having representatives from different departments and different business units that touch the work that is done by these contractors and suppliers. Is that right? Got it. Okay. And so because by virtue of your position, and in Archie's case, by virtue of his position, basically this comes with the territory of the specific role that you have.
Correct. It is based off our position.
Got it. Okay, well, let's move on then. And I know you have been on the DEI committee for about 2 years. I looked at the record. You may not know this because Archie was already on the committee when you came on board, but he's been on it for about 3 years. And he will phase out whenever he ends up in a new position. But for now, he continues to be on it. So you have basically overlapped with him the entire time that you've been there. And I've also taken a look at the other colleagues and in terms of their timeline. So I certainly want to focus on interviewing first the people who have overlapped with him and with you and him the longest period of time. And then there are some that are a little bit newer. But give me a sense. So you've been coming to these meetings for 2 years. Give me a sense of what the meetings are like, the types of, you know, discussions that you all have, but really more specifically getting down to how it is that Archie participates and more specific examples as to why you have concerns about his participation in the meetings.
Sure. So specifically, the committee looks at bringing in qualified contractors who are either minorities or are women-owned businesses or both. As a female professional and a mother of biracial children, I just find it an extremely exciting part of the job that I get to partake with. And other members of the team really show the same vigor of trying to find these companies and work with these new clients and contractors. And then you have moments where Archie will chime in and, you know, say that if the owner was a white guy, he wouldn't stand a chance. Anytime we bring up race, he just very clearly scoffs and kind of crumps up in his chair, kind of pouts. And it just really slows down the process of the team. The team, like, we really try to just move past it. But at some point, when is that not enough? When do we start taking action on what he's saying and holding him accountable for slowing the DEI process down?
So you've given me a couple of examples of the types of statements that he makes. Am I correct in assuming that those are just some examples, that there have been more?
Yeah.
Okay. But along those same lines.
Yes.
All right. And I know, because I've looked at the records, that this committee meets once a month. Would you say that these are whatever variety, whether it's a scoffing, whether it's a specific comment, whether it's, you know, talking about race, are these statements that Archie makes at every single meeting, only sometimes? How often would you say they happen?
I would say that this is an every meeting occurrence, something, one of these items happens.
Got it. Okay. And you started to say, and I want to just get a little bit more in terms of the rest of the colleagues. How do people react? What do they say either during the meeting or maybe after the meeting?
No one directly tells him to stop. And I think that's another frustrating point for me. People just kind of roll their eyes. It's, oh, Archie, you know, it's here he goes again. But people rarely even make comments saying, okay, that's enough, to even get him. It's just ignore it and move past. But we do definitely talk about it offline and, you know, at the water cooler in the break room. Just, it's so frustrating that everyone else sees it, but no one is saying anything in the meetings.
Right, right. And there were a couple of specifics. You know, I put together an outline for today's interview based on the information that you shared. And again, thank you so much for providing that information. So I want to ask a little bit more specifically about some of the kind of timeline, you know, points in the timeline that I think you identified as most important. So one was that in addition to talking to some of your colleagues and hearing from them, their equal amount of frustration, disappointment over the types of comments that Archie makes, you actually remember that you went directly to the team leader to express not only your dissatisfaction and maybe on behalf of others, but essentially to get the leader to do something about that. Tell me about that conversation and what, if anything, was done.
Yeah, so I did go to the team lead. I addressed my concerns. I even brought some of the examples that I've even given you. And again, it was just brushed off. It feels like because Archie has been here for so long that he gets away with more because of his tenure with the company.
And the team lead also sits in on those meetings, right? So he would have heard these comments.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and I've asked why he didn't address the behavior, and it, you know, truly like undermines the corporate effort to even have this committee to begin with.
Right, right. And just to make sure that I got it right, because you said this a little bit ago, it sounds like one of your frustrations is as it relates to the way that Archie is allowed to say these things, even when you go to the team lead. Am I correct in sort of extrapolating that one of your frustrations is that, you know, by contrast, the rest of the company is very committed to diversity and the rest of your team really puts all of their effort into making sure that you diversify your contractor and supplier ranks. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. We love being there and we love the company and we love their dedication to this. And so to be able to be a part of it is something we all actually really look forward to. So it's always a little bit of a buzzkill, for lack of a better word, when Archie says stuff like this.
Right, right. And then there were two additional things that you talked about in your written complaint that I want to talk about as well. So one was that you were walking by a conference room and you saw that Archie was actually sitting in on what you knew to be an interview with a prospective contractor, you know, because you're on the committee and you know that you all were hiring for this. And you also know, because Archie has told you, according to the complaint that I read of yours, that he is actually buddies with this particular contractor. And it's another white gentleman with whom Archie has worked in the past. And so another concern that I just want to hear more detail about is that you attached for me, so thank you very much, all of the ethical rules related to contractors being hired. And I saw, as you pointed out, the very specific language that says that if you are part of a decision-making team, you really can't participate in any of the decision-making if you have some kind of influence or relationship with. And so based on the knowledge that you had, that Archie was buddy with this guy, that this guy, his company was up for this contract, you say that you saw him actually participating in one of the meetings. Tell me about that and tell me if I've gotten that right, that that's what your concern is.
Yeah. So just starting with the application process really quick, a little bit about some of the documents that I provided on the picking of the contractors.
Sure.
It is insanely detailed and rigorous. And in all of my time with the company, I have never seen an unqualified contractor, no matter their minority or majority owned, no matter what, they have all met the criteria needed until this one, which was Archie sitting all buddy-buddy with his friend, another old white man. And it just was so clear that he was influencing decisions about hiring this guy as a contractor. I addressed this with some of the team, but they all said they supported me and they agreed that it was definitely unethical. However, when time came and I brought up formally lodging a complaint, they were too afraid to do so because of Archie's status with the company. The contract did end up going to a different company in the end, which I think is good, again, because I don't think they were qualified, but Archie kept making comments then about how companies owned by white guys were not getting a fair shot over and over again.
Right. So even though from your perspective, it was actually Archie, who was violating one of the ethical rules, that didn't stop him from continuing to make the types of statements that were bothersome to you and other colleagues?
Not at all.
Got it. And then you also identified, and I'd like you to give me a little bit more context, but that there was a moment in time where you sort of felt there was a shift that, you know, maybe Archie was somehow maybe saw you as an ally, as a fellow white employee, but that there was a time when he came into your office and saw that your screensaver had some family pictures that you just felt kind of, you know, made a difference in terms of how he interacted with you and his opinion of you. Could you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So we were working on a contractor project for the DEI team, obviously. And he came into my office to address some questions that he had, and he just thought it would be quicker than email, which we all know those people. On my screensaver, yes, was a slideshow of my family. I am, as we've said, white, but my children are biracial. And it was when he saw, when I was like, oh yeah, this is my family, these are my kids. It was an immediate shift in his face. His nose crumpled up. He couldn't even hide it. He couldn't even hide his disdain. And that was really upsetting for me.
Did he treat you any differently after that, or was it more just in that moment?
Yeah, no, it was pretty consistent after that, that it felt the comments got a little more pointed in the meetings, even though he would say something, but it would, maybe he was looking at me when he said it, or, you know, the whole thing about the promotion.
Right, right. Yeah, so let's talk about that. So what for you was the last straw, and obviously we've now gone through the fact that it is not the only thing. You obviously have a lot of issues that have gone on over time. And again, thank you so much for sharing the details of those with me. But ultimately, it was the fact that you were up for this promotion and that you fear that he might have had some negative influence in the decision-making of that promotion decision. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So I was applying for a different management position. It would be a little bit of a jump for departments, but I was really excited and thought I stood a fair chance for the position. I was walking by a conference room, and this was after the slideshow, it's like him seeing that my children were biracial. He was talking rather coyly with the person who was conducting the interviews in a conference room by himself. And when I walked by, he even kind of glared at me as I was passing. And I know that he's probably not the full reason why I didn't get the promotion. I understand that, but I can't help but think that he took me down quite a few notches after having lunch with them.
Got it. Okay. Well, listen, as I started out, I want to once again thank you for having the courage to talk about this. I know that these are very uncomfortable and difficult conversations to have, and I really appreciate your candor. I appreciate you being open enough to talk about these things. Is there anything that I've missed? I've gone through the specifics that you talked about in your written complaint. Is there any other information? I've already indicated, obviously, I'm going to be talking to Archie. I am going to be interviewing the team lead, as well as, at the very least, the other colleagues who are on the DEI committee who have overlapped with the two of you for some time to get their take on it. But is there anything else that you think is important for me to know?
Other than really like pushing to speak to some other members of the DEI team, I just thank you for listening. And you know, this was the last straw. This team and myself have been so bothered by Archie's anti-diversity sentiments. It's just, I had to speak up because everyone else wouldn't.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, Gloria, again, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Admittedly, a condensed version of what a full interview, especially with the person who was the target of the behavior, who was bringing the complaint, would have been like in real life. This took a lot longer than 20 minutes, but this gives you a good idea about a couple of things that I want to point out here at the end. And as I said in the beginning, this is certainly applicable if you are a person tasked with actually performing these investigations, receiving complaints, investigating them, and then resolving them. We're going to get a lot into more into that in the last episode in this series. But I also just want to reiterate that this is for any leader, because I guarantee you that at some point you are going to receive some type of complaint or concern if you haven't already. And it's also great listening for an employee who maybe isn't in a leadership position yet to know what to expect. This is, if you are at a company that takes these matters seriously, this is the type of investigations that you should expect, that are thorough, that are compassionate, that are seeking the truth. And so I want to point out a couple of things that go to that, to the heart of the matter, which is really the approach, both from a mindset perspective and from a tactical step-by-step perspective. Two big picture issues that I want to point out, and I'm going to reiterate these when I interview Archie next week. And that is two interrelated topics, no judgment and no conclusions. And what I mean by that is, very often I interviewed people who wanted me to talk to their pastors or to their family members to convince me that they were a good person. And I would often say to them, you know, I'm not here to judge your moral character. I'm not here to judge you as a person. I'm here to look at what happened and to really make some decisions about whether it interfered with the workplace, whether it was in violation of some expected behavioral standards, and help the company figure out what to do once we got to the truth to move on and resolve this issue. And so, you know, you notice that I don't make any judgment calls. I do summarize. I do certainly ask very pointed questions. But at no point in time did I say to Gloria anything like, well, you know, you should have done this, or I'm not sure if you really meant that. And I've seen this, unfortunately, with investigators at organizations that don't quite understand the importance of that. So just as one example, I sometimes come in and we'll do a second investigation, a follow-up investigation, because the first one didn't quite resolve the issues. And I've seen the file, and it contains from the investigator in too many cases notations in the notes files when the person is interviewing someone, for example, the complainant, saying, well, this isn't true, this is inaccurate. And so the idea of having that type of a judgment really oozes from you when you're an investigator, and the people that you're interviewing are going to feel less comfortable and frankly discouraged from being completely honest with you if they get that sense that you're judging them. And then kind of along the same lines, this idea of not reaching a conclusion too early. I've just seen this, you know, so many times when someone comes in, complains about something, and the immediate reaction from a leader is, that couldn't have happened. You must have misunderstood. This is just that person's personality. And then not going any further. So being dismissive and really reaching a conclusion prior to doing the work. I can't tell you how many times, and you learn this the more investigations you do, can't you tell how many times I was surprised? So I spoke to the first witness. Oftentimes it was the person bringing the allegations. Sometimes it was someone else. And in my mind, you know, my mind might go in one direction thinking, oh my goodness, this looks really bad, or, you know, this doesn't look like a big deal. And by the time I interviewed two or three more people, I realized that my initial impression was completely wrong. But the reason I was able to get to that stage was because I kept an open mind. And even though my brain might have taken me to this place of reaching some conclusions or making some judgments, I would stop and say, you know, let me interrupt those thoughts and truly move forward with this investigation with an open mind. So no judgment, no conclusions. And then I just wanted to point out some very specific things, more kind of the tactical ways in which you should be striving to conduct these interviews. One is, I want you to, and if you need to, if you're a person who's actually practicing these interviews, go back and listen to the way that I summarize the things that Gloria has said. And I do this for two reasons. I let her talk. I let her tell her story. I don't interrupt her. But when there is a pause, when she has answered my question fully and provided me with all the information she has, you probably noticed that I went back and said, okay, so if I hear you correctly, I heard you say this and that. Am I right? And I'm trying to accomplish two things there. The first is to give Gloria peace of mind, to really send a message to her, which is an authentic message, that I am not only listening to her, but as I'm listening, I am picking up what is most important in terms of the issues related to her concerns. And so it creates this cycle where the more I do that, the more Gloria trusts me, the more she is willing to be fully honest and open with me, and the more she knows that I'm really here to truly listen to her. And you'll hear that I do this. I'll do this next week with Archie. I do it with all witnesses. It's not something that a technique you only use for certain people. It's a technique you should really use in all instances to create that comfort, that safety. But the second reason that I use that summary is I want to make sure I got it right. So in my case, I'm writing notes. When I was doing these investigations, I would type my notes. And that's for another podcast episode in terms of the evolution and best practices on that. But I'll just tell you that I was typing notes. And one of the reasons, the other primary reason that I would ask this question, did I get that right, is to make sure I got it right. If the person on occasion would say, well, not quite, you missed this detail, then wonderful. That means that I have, fixed my notes, made sure that they are 100% accurate. Thankfully, the more you do these, the better you get. And in most instances, I would get, yes, that's right. That's exactly, what I was trying to say. Thank you so much for saying it back to me in such a succinct and accurate way. So one was listening to those summaries. The second is that I made it clear to Gloria that I'd done my homework. And so in real life, prior to having any of these interviews, I would have reviewed documents. In this particular case, Gloria had not only submitted a written complaint, but also some supporting documents. And I wanted her to know that I took this very, very seriously. So not only did it, from a practical perspective, give me the information I needed in order to conduct a really thorough investigation or a thorough interview, it also, I want to make sure that Gloria understands that I've done my homework and take this very seriously. And the last thing is that you'll notice, and you'll see this throughout my interviews examples as well, is that I'm trying to get a certain level of detail. And so one example is that I asked Gloria when she gave me examples of the types of statements or body language that Archie engaged in, I asked, how often does this happen? Is it at every meeting? Again, in real life, this would have been a much more detailed interview, but I wanted to get that into my reenactment of this interview just to give you that piece that really exemplifies, the importance of getting all that detail. So stay tuned. Next week, I am going to be interviewing Archie. And if you think you know exactly where this is going, it turns out you might be right. It turns out you might be wrong. But that's the beauty of these investigations, is that you really are a sleuth. You really are a person putting together a jigsaw puzzle that has pieces that are sometimes unexpected. But in the end, one of the main learning lessons that I want to get from this particular reenactment is what we do with the information and how we use it to make our workplace better, to actually use it as an opportunity to become better rather than looking at it as a burden of having to deal with these complaints. So stay tuned for next week as I interview Archie, the following week when I wrap it all up and give you my analysis, my conclusions, and kind of next steps. But until then, stay tuned and stay drama-free.